Today is March 24th, and we were joined by Yankees prospect Clark Schmidt today as we recorded from my apartment in New York. Let's do it. Let's talk Yanks.
Talking Yanks with old John Boy. John Boy and Jake.
And Clark Schmidt.
Recaps galore, weekly awards, stat lines, steaming hot takes. Your Yankees news with these two fine dudes. It's time for Talking Yanks. Talking Yanks with old John Boy. John Boy and Jake.
Clark Schmidt.
Talking Yanks with old John Boy. John Boy and Jake.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to Talking Yanks. My name is John Boy, and sitting next to me is my co-host and good friend, Jake. We are in my apartment in Manhattan because the quarantine has shut down John Boy Media headquarters. It is a non-essential office space. Non-essential company.
Opinion.
Yeah, right?
Hard opinion.
Jake, how are you doing? I think to a lot of people, what we do is essential to their day-to-day.
I agree.
Wow.
James, how are you? Yeah, it was when that came out, it's kind of funny. I mean, they literally put the illegal yes on booze stores being open.
That's insane to me.
Yeah.
It's a real, like, look in the face.
Yeah, right.
At the country.
Yeah, and it's... I think it's the right decision. Which
liquor
is the
stores
worst
are
part.
No, I don't think it's right. Liquor stores are essential. Come on,
I think so. But no, and it's crazy, and we know everyone out there's dealing with it. So thanks for dealing with us. Damn, I'm good. But yeah, no, it's crazy. I mean, you start thinking about like laundry places, like
those are essential.
Those are essential, but I don't think they were listed in the original package. You know, it starts getting crazy. What is essential? You know, where do I get my coffee? Probably not essential, but that's neither here nor there.
If liquor's essential, then coffee's essential.
I mean, there's an argument to be made there, right?
Yeah.
So that's for you guys to bicker about with your people you're trapped with in your quarantine. I walked through Central Park to get here.
Yeah.
And then hopped on the B briefly, but I'm going to tell everyone I walked here, and that'll be part of my story. As my grandpa was famous for walking through the town of Derby, Connecticut with a sack of potatoes, I walked across Manhattan.
And you're wearing your grandpa's hat.
And I'm wearing my grandpa's hat.
All comes full circle.
Wow.
Wow. Heavy. Yeah. I mean, obviously not much news. You know what? There was, you know what Brian Hoke said? He's not allowed into spring training, but Severino was.
Sevy's in there doing something.
Well, actually, Clark.
Spoiler.
Clark, spoiler, who we talked to, said that rehabbing players are still allowed in.
Yeah.
So that's good job. Anyway, there's not much. We're going to try and get as many interviews as we can while during this hiatus, and we'll do voicemail episodes as well. So next Thursday night, we will record the voicemail episode that gets released on Friday. So call in to the voicemail line, which is 980- Damn, I haven't voiced it in so long.
Wow.
9-8-9-0-8. Strike that, reverse
Let's start it from the top.
908-845-5792. That's the voicemail
Do
line.
Do we want a theme or anything? Theme is questions.
Questions? Opening day memories? Opening day Ooh. Questions?
Baseball?
Baseball's a good theme.
Or not.
Yeah.
I'm okay with either.
Okay. Open-ended.
The
your
theme
guys' call.
The theme is grab bag.
Okay. What's your favorite kind of grab bag?
We've discussed this. I forget if it was on here or JJR. Tune in. We do a secret Santa or white elephant every year, and there's supposed to be a theme on it. And the theme, like, 2 years ago was it was like open-ended, or it was like do what you want with it, and it was like that's not anti-theme. And yeah, that my sister still hasn't recovered from that.
I remember you telling me that story before. It's a bad I'm with your
it
sister.
It was tough
I'm with her.
It came in with really really good intentions. It was also fair to be like, well, that it was anti-theme. Yeah. But that's this week's voicemail episode. So that is 908, and the rest of the numbers Jimmy said before.
854, Chad Green, Roger Maris, Derek Jeter.
845, maybe. I don't know.
Didn't I say 845?
You said 854 right then.
Oh, it's 845 for sure.
Okay.
845. It's on our Twitter and it's our Instagram there. And our everywhere. Just go find it on your own. Jeez. Sure. Got to do everything for you. All right. Let's go straight to this interview that we had with Clark Schmidt. I will play the interview.
Oh, no.
What?
You're getting too excited for interview warning music.
Oh, my God.
No.
I'm just trying to do the interview interlude that we do here on Talking Yanks. Here we go.
Oh, back to back. Belly to belly.
We are joined by Yankees pitching prospect Clark Schmidt. Clark, how you doing, brother?
I'm doing great. How you guys?
We're good, man. We are in my spare bedroom of my apartment, riding out the quarantine in New York City. And you're in Atlanta, back home?
Yeah, back home in Atlanta with the family, kind of doing not a spare bedroom, but I am quarantining with the family. I guess you could say we're all hanging out here in suburbs of Atlanta.
Are you getting the quarantine crazies yet? I mean, are you still settling in? Because I know
I think everybody's somewhat getting it. My mom's like any other mom, and she's a stickler on it, and she wants everybody, rightfully so. I mean, she's doing what all moms do and make sure that we do all the precautions and stuff like that. And so I get it from her all the time. So yeah, I mean, just watching a lot of Netflix and playing a lot of video games, I guess, and doing what you can do, working out and stuff like that.
What's your Netflix show right now?
So actually I got into, I recently got into Formula One, the F1 documentary. It's like a 2-season thing so far. And it's insane. I love that show. It's actually really sick.
And you're kind of a reality show guy, right? We got some notes on you. We got some notes on you.
Yeah, there you go. Huge reality TV show guy. I love it. That's great entertainment.
So are you just planning on getting lost in there? Are you going to, can you like rewatch reality TV?
I don't know. That's not something. I mean, I guess you could maybe. I've actually rewatched Jersey Shore before. I think it was better the second time. So I don't know. I think the challenge is coming out.
I'm a challenge junkie. And
So yeah, love the challenge.
I was just told, I stopped watching, and then I was told that it got good again. The last two seasons. So
I think it's better than it was before. Now the drama is real good now.
So I went back. I watched the last two seasons, and it is good. They went back to that producer. I got to ask: are you a Johnny Bananas guy?
Love Johnny Bananas. I am. I'm all in on Johnny Bananas. I'm here for the drama. He's good. He's good TV. He makes a really good TV, and he's just a rattlebox. He's in everybody's head. And it's hilarious to watch.
And then do you appreciate Zen Dad CT as much as Crazy Angry CT? Because I appreciate No?
Yeah. Right. Yeah, I want old CT back. I want RIP CT. I always think back to the CT. I don't know. A lot of people might not know the Johnny Bananas scene where they're in the
backpack.
I don't know. And he like throws on his backpack and just runs off with him. That thing is, that's the sickest scene ever.
It's the most powerful scene in sports history. I'm not even a huge challenge guy, but like I've got that stuck in my head of CT with the locked legs just stomping on, and it's unreal.
That's putting it lightly. That's just the most athletic thing I've ever seen.
I like old CT. Zen CT cracks me up a little bit. And then all these UK guys, I was nervous, but some of them are pretty good. Like Bear is great for entertainment reasons.
Yeah, he's great TV. Anybody who just gets in people's heads like that and just gets people riled up, I'm all here for it. I mean, that's just when people are freaking out because they're just mentally weak, and then Miller or Johnny Bananas and Bear just crack them like an egg. Like it's so easy.
Are you a on the field, are you a light switch guy? Like, do you go into game mode? Like, the CC Sabathia, he's like a guy on the challenge. Like, when he steps in between the lines, he turns like an crazy CT or like an angry person just screaming and yelling, especially with the Tampa Rays stuff.
Yeah, I'm definitely, I would definitely say I'm like that. It's kind of like, you try to have not an alter ego, but you kind of just have two different like personalities, and just like one, I definitely am way different than how I am when I'm on the field or like game days. Like even the day that I'm pitching, I'm that guy that, you know, everybody talks about, like, you don't really want to talk about or be around, or that's me on game days. Like every other day I'm like always calling my family, like just keeping in touch with them and letting them know what's going on. But like when game days happen, like I don't get a call from them at all until after the game. Like, and they just know to not really mess with me. And then, like during the game, I'm just like super competitive kid. And like, I've always been like that. So yeah, I've always been like super fiery on the field and, not easily set off, but just like, you know, you're on edge and you're just ready to, you're just like kind of that killer mentality and just like that attack. And so, yeah, whenever I see CC's clips or anybody's clips of him getting fired up, like during games, especially during, like you said, during the Tampa Bay Rays and stuff like that, I can think about a lot of games like that when I was in college, in some of the SEC games and stuff like that, doing that. So, yeah, I'm definitely like that. Maybe a little bit more than I should be, but, yeah, I'm definitely one of those fiery guys out there.
No, no such thing as too much. Gotta let it all out.
when did that start? Because I think that's interesting, because that is an old baseball thing. And I'm like, were you, you know, 10-year-old Little League, and it was like, Mom, don't talk to me on game day? Or was it college? Or when did that officially happen?
Yeah, so I think, like, for me, when I was in high school, so I grew up with a brother who's 2 years older than me, and he was always like way better than me at everything. And he was really good at baseball. In high school, like he turned down really high draft pick and stuff like that. So it was always one of those things where he like kind of pushed me to be better. And it was just like, I just always had a chip on my shoulder because I was kind of a late developer in high school. I mean, I was always good and very talented, probably one of the more talented players on the team. But I was never like that guy, like where you look at him, you're like, oh, this guy's a Major League Baseball player, or this guy's like, he could dominate the SEC or something like that. You know what I'm saying? So it was like, I was a late bloomer. And then when I got to my senior year of high school, it was like, this guy, you don't even want to play against. Cause it built up, and I was kind of, I always played with the chip on my shoulder. And then I started to, throw a little harder, and I got a lot better, and just, I was just a lot more talented than I was when I was younger. And it just took a whole nother level where, I mean, I can think back to games where like, in high school where there was, whether it was bad umpiring or something like that, not me just yelling or berating the umpires. It was just, I would always just, I'm not afraid to say what's on my mind, especially when I'm out there. And it was one of those things where whenever I'm playing against you, it's like, I'm just like, I just have that killer mentality where it's like, I just want to destroy you. And kind of like, I was watching the Sonny Gray podcast talking with Trevor Bauer, and they were talking about just their mentalities when they're pitching. It was like, they put it perfectly. Just whenever you're out there, it's just like this feeling that you just want to, whatever hitter I'm facing, I want to make sure that they just don't want to ever face me. Like when they look at the lineup card in the morning, I want to make sure that, you know, they're kind of like, oh crap, I got to face him again. So it's kind of one of those feelings where you just want to intimidate the hitter as much as you can. And kind of just put as much fear as you can into them and just, you know, completely dominate them to where they don't want to face you again. And so, and that's how I am in anything, whether it's like around the house, whether I'm playing ping pong with my brother or with my boys or playing pool or just whatever I'm doing in the backyard or golf, whatever it is, I want to beat you so bad that, you know, you just don't want to play it anymore. And that's kind of how I've always been.
How's the ping pong game? I know the Yankees did their whole competition in spring.
I was I'm pretty good at ping pong. I think I made it to the Final Four. Or I think I made it to the Elite Eight.
Not bad.
I got so it wasn't bad. I was a pretty high seed too. So I mean, I had some high expectations going in. I ended up facing a little underdog in Trey Ambergy, and he was a low key like white horse, just sliding in, beating everybody. Nobody expected him to do it.
Did you get beat by Trey Ambergy?
I got beat by him. So he was, I think he ended up making it to like, I know he made it to the Final Four. I want to say he made it super deep. So, I mean, he was a big underdog. I think, so what they did was they would ask you like, how good you think you are. And then like other people would like vouch for you and they would say like your rankings.
Who was in charge of all the rankings?
I don't know. I think it was Chad, one of our middle strength guys. And so okay. I think
Damn, mental strength coach walking around asking you to be honest about it.
That's messed up.
Yeah, I know. It was serious. So I think he sandbagged it a little bit. I think he's put, because he was a low seed, and he was just mowing through guys. So I think he sandbagged it. I don't know.
Wow. I went to a ping pong tournament freshman year of college, and I showed up, and I had only ever played my dad and my brother, and I was pretty good against them. And then I go to college, and it was the whole tennis team was there, and this one dude just rope-a-doped me. I beat him in warm-ups. So I was like, this guy, and then he just absolutely destroyed me. I left.
It's honestly like, it was low-key nerve-wracking. Like the first round, like I was like a 3 seed or a 4 seed, and I was playing a really low seed. And so it was like, you're supposed to dominate him. It's just like, you know how it is. It's like everybody's watching you, and you're like, dude, there's no way I should lose this guy. So you're like, and it's just like, not every day you're practicing ping pong. I hadn't played in like months. And so it was like one of those things where you just got to really lock in. I was like, I'm not losing this game.
Was there like a cheering section during all this? Did like guys stand around and watch every game?
It was intense. I mean, we had, so there was a bunch of tables at first, and then like the later rounds, they would move more tables to where like guys could kind of like, not necessarily surround the table, but I mean, there was a big circle of like everybody would stay. I mean, all the player development, not the player development, all the coaching staff and everybody, and then all the players. I mean, everybody stuck around, and it got pretty intense. But the championship, Kyle Holder, he just completely dominated. It wasn't even a competition for him. He was season nasty. He's next level.
Yeah, I mean, we're semi-connected to this Yankees world, and we got word that he was the favorite going in. So, I mean, when you've got that kind of reputation, I mean, that's...
Yeah, he's got a lot of clout.
That's pretty crazy.
Did he come with his own paddle? Did anyone come with their own paddle?
So, no, nobody came with their own paddle. Thinking back on it, I wish I did. I wish I brought my own table, because some of the tables were like, I'm being a stickler here, but, we were... Some of the tables, there were, like, the real, like, ping pong material table, and then some were, like, a plasticky table, so you couldn't really spin the ball or anything. So, yeah, it's like playing in an opposing away park or something. Like, it definitely threw a curveball in the mix.
Damn.
Curveball in the mix. Segue. We will talk a little baseball in here. We do that sometimes. let's go back a little bit. You're a South Carolina guy, right? Or you went to game. Cocky, go Cox.
Yeah, that's right. So I'm from Atlanta, and then I went to University of South Carolina.
Okay, and a big bro was Clemson?
Yep,
Clemson. And, I mean, in South Carolina, that's as big as a beef gets. I mean, how did that go down?
Yeah, so, he's 2 years older than me. And like I said, he was pretty much a stud. Like, he was one of the perfect game All-Americans and all those guys. One of those, he just had a lot of recognition coming out of high school. And so he went to Clemson. And when I was coming up my sophomore junior year, when I was getting heavily recruited by a bunch of schools, like, I was trying to figure out where I was going to go. It was one of those things where I was a late bloomer, but I did have a lot of looks. I was like one of those kids where it was like, oh, this kid's going to be really good for a college player. But I don't know about the next, like, I don't know about anything after that. So for me, I was, my sophomore, junior year, I started getting looks at most of the SEC schools, and then a lot of the ACC schools. And my favorite team was UGA, just being a Georgia kid. So I was thinking, I was always like, oh, I'm going to end up going here. Like, and then after I visited Georgia, I was like, I don't think I really want to go there. My brother was already at Clemson, and everybody, and Clayton, my brother, and everybody else was already assuming that I was just going to go end up playing at Clemson with him. And then it just like got down to the decision time, and I was like, I think I'm just going to cut my own path. Like, because at the time he had such a big name for himself, and I was like, I'm going to go make a name for myself and kind of do my own thing at South Carolina. And what better way to do that than have a little family rivalry and add a little competition. So it was a lot of fun. And yeah, it's intense. I guess you could say Thanksgivings and Christmases were always intense around that time, especially when we were there together. And, we'd always go back and forth, and it was all in good fun, and it was a lot of fun, especially because we got to play against each other for 2 years, so it was fun.
Does he was a pitcher as well, right?
Yeah, so he my sophomore year I was a Friday night starter, and then he was the Saturday starter. So we thought going into the year we were going to face each other both times, But we ended up pitching against each other on different days. But yeah, it's still just as intense, and it was a lot of fun. Especially, I don't know if it was as fun for my parents, just because how nerve wracking it was. But it was definitely a lot of fun for us.
What was his pitch mix? You have that same curve that you got?
Yeah. So he was he has good off speed stuff. He was more of a changeup guy. He had a big changeup and a big slider. So, but yeah, he actually, I think it was my sophomore year. I went out and threw I don't know the exact line, but it was like 8 shutout innings or something like that on Friday night. And the next day, Clay was pitching against us, and he went out and threw a perfect game through 5 innings or something like that.
Oh, wow.
So
that's tough.
Yeah, I know. So it was like he had to try to one-up me or something like that. Of course he had to do that. So.
Were backyard wiffle ball games boring growing up? Were you guys just mowing each other down?
Yeah, it was just families breaking up, moms breaking up fights, just going at each other tooth and nail. And that's how we've always been. It's just like it's just whatever we're doing, it's like we're going at each other's throats. Like we're trying to – beat each other so bad.
Is Clayton home during quarantine times with you guys as well?
Yeah, he's quarantining it up with the whole family.
Oh
yeah.
Wow! So you guys got to break out the ping pong table and the wiffle balls then?
Yeah, we're playing. We're like doing the Call of Duty thing and doing the ping pong, and me and him will just go golfing just ourselves sometimes. And yeah. it'll make mom happy. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. We were going through this. We like to prepare a little bit, not too much. That's not our strength. But, I mean, the year you get drafted, I mean, you're the Gamecocks ace. You're cruising. You go down. You have to get TJ. And then, you know, you end up being the first round pick of the New York Yankees. And obviously that speaks to us a little more than other people. But, I mean, it's the Yankees. Mm-hmm. And, right. I mean, was that time period just a goddamn roller coaster ride? Or, I mean, did you have... People, I mean, I'll give it to you, man. Like, what was going on then?
Yeah, it was insane. Like, just the whole process of it. Like, you obviously knew about the draft process and how it works, but then when something like this happens, you're just like, what is going on? Like, what do we do now? So yeah, I had the surgery like a month, almost like a month to the T before the draft. And so at the time I was just like, I don't know if I'm going to go back to school. I don't know if I'm going to get drafted. And then like once the dust kind of settled, like, and everybody like took a step back, like after that first week of just like initial shock and like the surgery and traveling and doing all that. After we took a step back from that, it was kind of like, okay, we're going to do the draft route. Like, I talked to my agent and everybody and we had a good plan laid out. And we set some numbers in place and it was like, this is what we're shooting for. And going into it, like I knew my name was getting thrown around a lot. And then once it got like closer and closer to the draft, I didn't know for sure, but it almost got to the night of the draft. And it was like, all right, I know for sure I'm probably going to the first round. There was a bunch of teams. There was like 4 or 5 teams in the back end of the first round that were definitely going to take me. And we knew, and then the Yankees were like one of those like dark horse teams that kind of came up, and they were like mid first round, and they were like, look, we're all in on you, but we're trying to just see how it plays out. And then once it came down to the pick, they ended up taking me, and it was just like, it was an unbelievable feeling. I was just so thankful for Damon and all the guys that went into it, and the whole process was just, they made it a lot easier. I mean, it was just one of those things where you really don't know, even like after I got drafted, like I didn't know how the rehab was going to go. I didn't know where I was going to go to do my rehab. And they just, every single thing that we had questions about, they answered, and they just made the process so much easier. And it went a lot easier than within the night after, I tore my UCL. I was freaking out that whole night. I mean, you don't sleep at all. And you're just like, what's going to happen? Going from that to draft night is just two different, completely different emotions and feelings. And to be able to kind of have those parallel was a great feeling.
Yeah, it's insane. So is there a scout that works that area? Because we were looking at it and Montgomery went to South Carolina.
It's a little little Yankees Gamecock pipeline right now.
Yeah, I know. We had Taylor Widener, Dom Thompson. So there's the area scout was Billy Godwin.
What a name.
He's now Yeah, I know. That's a baseball name, huh? And he's now a coach at UNC Wilmington, I want to say. So yeah, he was the area scout at the time. But obviously, like Damon and all the player development guys and scouting department, they, you know, they're the ones that call the shots, I guess. But yeah, Billy was the one who got me drafted. So we actually had a call like in passing, like probably like 3 days before the draft. I think I was in an airport somewhere. And he just like called me like casually, just like, hey, how you doing? Like, just checking in. He's like, oh, by the way, hopefully that we get you, like, hopefully, you know, your name falls to us. And I was like, okay, I just didn't think anything of it. And then next thing you know, like 2 days later, I'm getting a call from saying that, you know, we picked you. So it was insane.
Yeah, that's crazy. And then, I mean, your start, so like your draft story, as soon as you get drafted, did you have the surgery already? And we're ready. You're already recovering.
Yeah. So yeah, I had a month in. But like the first month, obviously you're not doing anything. You're just getting stitches out, just like hanging out, moving your arm barely, not if any. And so then I basically did my whole rehab with the Yankees. I mean, after I got drafted, once I signed, I ended up going down to Tampa and just spending my whole year or whatever it was, rehabbing with those guys.
I mean, that's a crazy story. It's crazy. Like Jake said, had to be an absolute whirlwind. Are you, so whenever we resume baseball, we kind of talked about how you're a reality show junkie. If you get up to Scranton, you become on a reality show. Excited for that? They're homegrown. They have their own reality show.
Oh, okay. You had me lost for a second.
Have you been on there yet?
No. So we had, when we were down to spring training, the Yes Network people were down there who I think they're the ones who run the homegrown stuff, and they were talking about it and saying that they were really hoping to get me on there. So yeah, I mean, I'm all for it for all sure. Right. Anything reality TV, I'm all in on, right?
Yeah, there you go.
And I mean, shit, you know, screw Scranton, get to New York, right?
That's exactly right. Hopefully I'm not having to go get on homegrown.
And I mean, let's the baseball a little bit. You know, it's. We get caught up in some of the generic baseball terms, but I mean, you were a fast riser, and I mean, it makes sense. You're a college guy, you know, you have TJ, and then you start cooking last year, and you were what, at three different levels last year?
So yeah, I'm basically two different levels. I had like a 3-week DL stint. I had to do like a couple outings down in rookie ball, for basically build up purposes. But, yeah, so I started in high A and then finished in Double A.
Okay. And I know we got excited, and I got to be careful how I phrase this because Twitter will come at me, but we enjoyed Larry Rothschild. I mean, he's been around baseball for years, but there was something very exciting when Matt Blake comes in. We like adding an accent to it because we think that sounds like a better baseball name. But did you get to work with Matt Blake a lot, or I guess with Matt Blake's people? Because we were saying, like, who's going to be excited about this? Because, I mean, if you're Masahiro Tanaka, if you're Aroldis Chapman, I mean, I think Matt Blake kind of gives you a thumbs up and says, hey, if you guys need anything, let me know. But I feel for someone like you, who's, you know, got an opportunity to make the team, or just at that point in your career where, you know, if Matt Blake can add a mile per hour here or some spin there, I mean, that could do wonders for you. So did you have a lot of opportunity to work with him, or how was that process?
Yeah. So, he's been awesome. And being in Big League camp, we spent as much time as we could together. I mean, thankfully spring training is not over yet. So, or at least hopefully it's not. So when we, you know, we spent a lot of time working on stuff, like not necessarily like, you know, velocity or anything like that, because that wasn't one of the things going into it that I wanted to work on. Some of the things that I wanted to work on would be like pitch selection and like pitch uses. So we would sit down with like the analytical team and kind of go over stuff like that. You know, just kind of like how to attack hitters almost necessarily. And then we talked a lot about just some mechanical, small mechanical things, whether it be like staying deeper on my back leg or just how I'm opening up. And he's one of those guys, he knows a lot about the back leg, like leg drive and lower half mechanics. He's so good with the lower half mechanics. He was like, I mean, he was a big part of that with the Cleveland organization. I mean, you see Clevenger and Bauer, the way they throw in their lower half. And I've kind of always been one of those guys who's not necessarily a drop and drive guy with my lower half, but I've definitely, you know, the lower half is my main driving force for my pitching mechanics. So kind of just working on and kind of fine tuning that with him, was one of the things that we would spend time on in bullpens and stuff like that. But yeah, he was great to bounce ideas off of and, just kind of get our minds together and kind of figure out, you know, whether it be efficiencies on pitches and stuff like that, what the most optimal would be for me, and stuff like that. So yeah, it was a lot. I learned a lot and, you know, hopefully I get to spend a lot more time with him throughout the year as well. So it was really good.
Yeah. All right, so you put that curveball on display this spring. I mean, Pitching Ninja had you, everyone was giving it up. Is that curveball part of your arsenal for years now? Is that where you were throwing in college or that kind of shape to it? Is that new?
Yeah. So it's kind of interesting the way it's, yeah, it's crazy how it's blown up. Like, you know, I mean,
it's nasty, man. I've watched it like 100 times.
I appreciate it. But yeah, in college, I threw a slider and a curveball, and like the slider. So for me in college, it was my slider. Like that was what I mean, like I struck out like all, I mean, if you look at like, if you go back and look at my strikeouts, about 70% of them were on my slider. And it was kind of a different grip. And so I threw a slider and a curve, and I would throw that curve that I'm throwing now. I would throw it mainly to lefties or just to get people off my slider. And so when I was throwing the slider, it was a lot slower, and the shape was just – I mean, the shape was not inconsistent, but it was just – it was a really depthy slider. It was one of those – it had the speed of, like, Chris Sale's, but it didn't have, like, the horizontal break of it. It kind of had a lot more depth. It was, like, 78 to 82 range. And it was just a really big swing and miss pitch on it. Like, I got a lot of hitters. They just couldn't really see the spin on it. But it wasn't one of those pitches where you see it and you're like, oh my gosh, like the break is insane on it. So then when I was done rehabbing with the Yankees, Danny Burrell at the time who was our pitching coordinator, was like, hey, let's just bag the slider and focus on fastball, curveball, change. Because I throw two different fastballs, so that would still be 4 to 5 pitch mix.
Are you horrified in that moment? Or are you excited? Because I mean,
at the time I was like, what do you mean? Like, I literally my sophomore year, I struck out like 130 guys and like probably 110 of them were on sliders. Like, yeah. I was like, what are you talking about? And he was like, yeah, let's just trust it. And like, we're just going to focus on, cause the slider was a different grip and I kind of slowed down my arm a little bit more for it because I was throwing it so slow. And so I was like, all right, whatever, I'm going to bag it. So I bagged it and then I started throwing the curve. And at the time before, my curve was probably like, it was around the same range. It was like 82 to 84, 83, and it had similar shape. And that's why we wanted to bag it, because it had so much, both the pitches kind of resembled each other so much. And they thought that my curveball was going to spin harder. So they were just like, stick with this one. Let's focus on this one. So I ended up focusing on it, and then throughout the year I kept throwing it. And then the next year when I came back, which would be last year, my first full year, I was throwing it, and I would throw it so much that it would, like, the velocity just started picking up on it and the spin just got crazy high on it. I mean, I probably, when I first started throwing my curve, it was like right around 2700 RPM. And then when I started throwing it more, like in spring training this year, it was spinning around like 3,000, 3,100. I would get it up to 3,100 sometimes. So I was just throwing it so much, my arm speed just got a lot better. And the velocity picked up on it to where it was like 84, 86. And it just took a whole nother level of like a whole nother plane to break on it once I started throwing it harder and spinning it harder. It just took a whole nother, and it also helped out my fastball because, you know, with the slider, my arm speed was slower because I was trying to, you know, guide my slider a little bit more. So when I started throwing the breaking ball, and it sped up my arm a lot more, and so my velocity and my fastball picked up as well, and just it kind of helped all my metrics on all my pitches. The shape that you see now is kind of not what you saw. I mean, you see it in college. I've always been one of those guys who could spin the ball really well. Like, even in high school, like, I never really threw really hard, so it was one of those things where I was always really, really good at throwing breaking pitches where I wanted to. So it was one of those things where I learned how to pitch before I learned how to throw hard. And then when I got to college, I started throwing hard and having like the command of my breaking ball. So it just took my game the next level.
Yeah, that's a nice way to go about that.
A lot of people, you see guys just throw like 95, 96 in high school. And they're like, oh, we're going to make you a pitcher. And then they got to learn how to pitch. But for me, it was backwards. I was like, I was that guy that just threw like 88, 89, 90. And I really command the breaking balls or my changeups wherever I wanted to. And then it got to where I threw really hard. And then it was like, it kind of made me the whole pitcher, I guess you could say.
Crazy. So when you throw the pitches in spring training and they're blowing up on Twitter and you're opening eyes and, you know, I see it and I'm like, holy shit. And I think every other Yankee fan, was there anyone within camp? Like, did Matt Blake, did like Higgy, the catcher, some hitters in live BP? Was there any of that did you, like opening eyes where people were like, yo, dude, that was nasty?
Yeah. I think the recognition I got more in camp was bigger. I was almost bigger than what I got outside. Like, I mean, the amount of people I had in the locker room coming up to me, talking about my breaking ball, whether they were giving me shit or they were just like, dude, that thing's nasty. It was kind of hilarious. I mean, I threw my live BP, my first one I think it was Gary Sanchez and a couple other guys. And even Gary, like, came up to me kind of, and he was just like, dude, that breaking ball, like, you know, in the Spanglish, you know, we got through the conversation. He was like, yo, the breaking ball, it's legit. Like, he was like talking about it. And then after I threw against that Rays game where I struck all those guys out and everybody was like hyping it up, whatever it was, on Pitch Ninja or whatever. There was a bunch of guys like Hap came up to me. I talked to Hap a little bit about it. And then Garrett Cole came up to me. Every time I see him, he's always making fun of me for my power breaking ball. He's always talking about the, you know, because even his breaking ball is kind of a power breaking ball too. Everything he throws is power, obviously. He threw, I think his last outing, he threw like a breaking or curveball at like 85, 86 and was like trying to making jabs at me, talking about my breaking ball because it's around the same velocity and stuff. Just calling it a power curve or whatever it is. And so everybody was giving me shit about it. It was pretty funny.
Hey, not a bad guy to be on his radar, huh?
Yeah, I know. I think there's worse people to be making fun of me. So it's good to be around him and kind of have some banter with him.
Yeah, Garrett Cole has never compared my breaking ball with his.
Yet.
I'm still working on it.
Yeah, exactly.
That's all you can do, right?
You never know. You never know what can happen.
So when baseball does come back, which again, who knows? You know, I try to be the optimist. We'll see what goes on. It'll be back at some point.
Exactly.
What's your mindset at? Because, you know, again, coming out of this spring training, you know, we'll see how different injuries and things work themselves out. But, I mean, is it for you, are you kind of in your own world and, you know, you're just going to do your best every day? Or is it kind of like, hey, I'm going to go out here and shove and try to force their hand? Or I think it's different for every person. What's kind of your mindset
I think my mindset is definitely I'm going to go out here and shove and kind of try to force their hand. Granted, I know that, you know, those decisions are over my head, like whether, you know, people coming back from injuries or whatever it may be, like all of those factors are things that are out of my control and stuff like that. So I truly really don't focus on that at all. If I go out there and I pitch to the level that I'm capable of pitching at and do the things that I know that I'm capable of doing, then I might open some eyes that whether and maybe force a hand, like you said, and kind of make it to where, hey, maybe we have to have this kid on the roster. But at the end of the day, it's one of those situations where, like I said, I can't control it. So if it happens, it happens. If they want me to go to AAA or whatever it may be and get some more innings or whatever it is, you know, obviously, and then at the end of the day, I just want to play baseball. You know, I'm down for whatever, obviously, but, you know, like you said, I want to force their hand. I want to go out there. I want to compete. I want to shove every time I go out there. Because, you know, whatever, you know, anything can happen at this point. I've seen crazier things happen, but at the same time, it's not something that I'm going to sleep at night. I'm always thinking about it, or I'm not losing any sleep over it. It's one of those things where it's just like, I'm just going to control what I can control. And that's how I pitch on the field and how I carry myself and stuff like that. So, I'll leave those decisions to the guys who make those decisions.
Sounds like the ideal mindset to me. Sounds like you're pretty good.
It's not bad.
Not bad. Cool, man. Well, thank you for joining us. We won't take up any more of your time. Maybe I'll be in touch come April 1st. We'll talk some challenge together.
I think we get...
There you go.
I think we get a wiffle ball game going. You and me versus the Schmidt Bros.
Yeah.
There we go.
You guys have to play lefty, though.
Yeah. You guys go lefty, and we get taped bats, and we're good.
rules
I'm
are
looking
rules.
Forward to that one. We'll have to do that one.
All right.
Sounds good, man. Thank you.
Enjoy your quarantine. I guess I'll have to... I don't know. I'll get back. I'll try to find something else to to ease the time of all this free time. I might have to make a TikTok or something.
Oh man,
be careful.
Yeah, everybody's. Yeah, I know. I tinker in the lines a little bit. Everybody's, they're doing all these challenges on Instagram and stuff. So
in your head, what does your first TikTok look like?
That's a good question.
Thank you.
I don't know. I might have to do the classic, whatever that renegade dance is, where they're like throwing their elbow. Yeah. You know, the class. Everybody knows it.
Yep.
Yeah. Or I could do the clout chasing, it's kind of like a thirst trap basically, where you just put some sad music on and you record something like kind of sad. And then you're like, tune in to part two. And then it's like nothing's part two. It's
that's
really nothing.
That's definitely the winner.
That's the way to go.
That's the winner.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Well, I enjoyed my time. You guys are awesome.
Yeah, man. We get nervous to do phone calls our first times with people because we're pretty silly. But, dude, this was perfect. Thank you.
Thanks, man.
Awesome. Well, you guys enjoy your time and stay safe.
You as well. All right. That was Yankees prospect Clark Schmidt. Very nice of him to call in and join us. And a little behind the scenes, Jake and I sometimes find it very difficult to do phone interviews because the banter gets hard and things get lost when you can't see each other's faces. Clark was awesome.
And credit to ourselves. We're fantastic interviewers. Wow,
just the best.
But no, that was awesome. Tweet and follow Clark Schmidt. I saw him on the Twitter sphere. And as you heard, he's in quarantine mode like all of us. So tell him thanks for coming on.
Yeah, do it. For real. Do it.
For real.
For real.
You gonna play another sound?
In life, unfortunately, all good things come to an end.
And that was the end of this episode. Thank you, John, for walking us through that. We'll talk to you guys later.
Stay safe.
Go Yankees.